Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on chumbacasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's chumbacasino.com and live the Chumba life. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited
by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus. Thank you to Best Fiends for sponsoring Murderific True Crime Podcast. Is everyone ready for summer? Hopefully everything is getting back to normal for you, and you may get some well-deserved time off or vacation, which leaves you with time to play the 5-star rated puzzle game Best Fiends, a game that challenges your brain with fun puzzle levels and has thousands of cute characters to collect. As you know, Murderific is back with a new season, but sometimes I need a break from researching true crime, and I like to play Best Fiends to unwind. Make sure to download Best Fiends free in the Apple App Store or Google Play. That's friends without the R. Best Fiends. Welcome to a true crime murderific journey. I'm your host, Bernadette. Stay tuned after the show for promos, patron shoutouts, and phone calls. Remember, horrific in murder equals murderific. Enjoy the show.
Content warning. The Murderific True Crime Podcast contains offensive language and will have information about kidnappings, torture, murder, and sexual assault. It is inappropriate for children or the faint of heart.
I believe I just heard a shot fired coming in my residence. 2 rounds of smoke and smoke, and I can't get an answer to the door.
Police department!
Body cams are rolling as Griffin police officers draw their weapons to sweep an apartment, looking for a shooter with 2 young children inside. They find a locked closet.
Let's kick that door in.
Inside, a body behind the door. It's the young mother, Jessica Boynton, bleeding from a head wound.
Everybody clear out.
Police find a gun underneath her body. It's one of theirs, a police-issue .40 caliber Glock, assigned to the victim's husband, Officer Matthew Boynton.
Jessica Lester and Matthew Boynton have been dating since high school. Marriage, 2 children, and a few affairs later, the relationship was toxic, and it was wrapping up, and it was ending. Matthew, now a police officer, on the early morning of April 15th, gets a suicidal text from his wife and sends emergency medical services to his home. There they find Jessica in a closet, on a blood-soaked pillow, and bullet holes in the wall. She clings to life barely, and beneath her husband's service gun. Welcome to another murderific episode, Jessica Lester and Matthew Boynton. Matthew Boynton and Jessica Lester went to the same high school in the state of Georgia. They met when Jessica was in 10th grade and Matthew was in 11th. Matthew's grandfather was the longtime sheriff of Spalding County. When Jessica was 16, she became pregnant with Matthew's child, and they settled down together, even at that young age. Jessica was a good mom, but she felt very isolated, as she had to finish her classes for high school online, and she rarely saw any of her friends or family anymore. Even at Jessica's graduation party at her grandparents' house, who raised her, the couple were only there a few minutes before Matthew announced they had to leave. Matthew followed his dream and became a police officer in Griffin, as his grandfather was. His fellow officers described Matthew as wound very tight. A senior officer even advised Matthew, quote, "lighten up a little bit, man," unquote. The marriage was rocky, with Matthew, surprisingly, calling police for frivolous reasons, like Jessica yelling at him or swearing or poking his chest. When police would arrive, Jessica was always quiet and reserved. Matthew had to assert his dominance and had to be in charge. That was the way the marriage went. Jessica was very unhappy, and in December of 2014, she had an affair and became pregnant. The child was not Matthew's. At this point, Matthew decided he and Jessica should be married, and he would raise this child as his own. The couple lived in Griffin while married, but Matthew was very controlling. Jessica wasn't allowed to have a credit card, and when Matthew went to work, he would take his truck just to make sure Jessica couldn't go anywhere. She couldn't even go to the supermarket by herself. Lots of red flags in this relationship, and lots of psychological abuse. Within 6 months of the couple being married in 2016, Matthew was cheating with Courtney Calloway, a dispatcher at Spalding County Sheriff's Office. Jessica found out about her husband's affair and in a text to Matthew said, quote, "If you don't want to be with me anymore, I'm not going to stay here and play house. It's not going to work for us. I already know it won't," unquote. Jessica found the strength to leave this abusive relationship. She made an appointment with a divorce lawyer. She started writing in a divorce diary of sorts, a notebook where she wrote down the times Matthew was with his mistress. Jessica was all ready to move in with her sister, Dusty, on April 15, 2016, and she got a job at a chiropractic's office that she would be starting the week after her move. She was all packed up and she was ready to go. That night before leaving, Jessica and Matthew went to Walmart together to buy formula because Jessica had to wean the baby off breast milk before beginning her new job. The couple started arguing, and Matthew ended up calling his coworker officers again, saying Jessica didn't want to get into his vehicle. The Griffin police lieutenant said, quote, "She's a grown lady. You can't force her into your truck," unquote. Apparently, Jessica eventually got into Matthew's truck because their neighbors, Megan Browning, saw them return together. This same neighbor, Browning, was in her bed and she heard a gunshot. She then went on her porch and heard another shot. She then saw Matthew quickly leave the residence in his truck. Matthew went to the Waffle House with a coworker. Matthew says at 12:54 a.m. he received a text message from Jessica. It said, quote, "I can't do this anymore. Take care of the children. Please tell them I love them every day. I have been suffering for a while now and no one has noticed. Here lately, I have not been able to recognize the person I see in the mirror. This is not the first time I've had suicide thoughts. I love you and the boys," unquote. You would think that after getting a text message from your wife like this, and that your children are in the home with her, your first thoughts would be to call 911, correct? Well, he did, but only after he responded to a joke from his mistress saying, "Haha, I'm sorry I didn't think about that, LOL," over texting. Matthew then called EMS dispatch and said to send officers to his house in reference to his wife. Matthew also said he was going to hurry up and go home to check what was happening. Matthew got to his house before the other officers did. He got on his police radio and said that he heard two gunshots as he was walking into his apartment. He then ran outside because he said that he was scared that maybe there was an active shooter situation. Also weird considering one of his children was in that apartment. Wouldn't you check to make sure that your child was okay? 11 officers went into the apartment. They checked every room. The older son was sleeping in his bedroom and the younger baby was crying alone in his crib. Jessica was found in her bedroom closet, unconscious. The closet was locked from the inside. Her head was on a bloody pillow, her hair covered in blood. The divorce notebook she had been writing in was in the closet, and Matthew's service weapon was underneath her stomach. There were also pages ripped out of the notebook. Police found two bullet casings and two holes in the closet wall. They found one bullet and no blood spatter. At the crime also was Matthew's grandfather, Officer Sheriff Wendell Beam. The police department asked for help early on from the Georgia Bureau of Investigation. Unfortunately, the GBI agent who interviewed Matthew had been longtime friends with Sheriff Wendell Beam, a blatant conflict of interest. Matthew made a point of saying he had not changed his clothes that night and authorities should test them. During the interrogation, he can be seen wearing a gray sweatshirt, but earlier in the evening at Walmart on surveillance footage, Matthew was wearing a red sweatshirt at 10:45. He also said he didn't wash his hands. Police did not test Matthew's clothes. They never even bagged his hands to test for gunshot residue. Authorities just went on the assumption that this was an attempted suicide, even telling Jessica's family this, as Jessica was fighting for her life at Atlanta Medical Center after being airlifted there. Georgia Bureau investigation agent spoke to Matthew's neighbors, and two sets of neighbors said that they heard gunshots around 11 p.m., not 1 a.m., as Matthew had said. One of the neighbors also said they heard banging, like banging on a door. Before the GBI investigation was even finished, Matthew Boynton was back at his police officer job with his service gun. We have a promo for you today I am very excited about. Have you heard of Scary Time, the podcast? Scary Time is from Indie Drop-In Network, bringing you a new independent creator each week with stories about ghosts, creatures, freaky places, weird experiences, aliens, haunted objects, and so much more. If you are looking for variety in your podcasts or are looking for your next binge-worthy one, Scary Time is the podcast for you. And of course, a great way to support indie podcasts. Prepare yourself for the creepiest stories from Scary Time Podcast. Check them out on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen on your podcast apps. On Jessica's admission form into the hospital, it said, 19-year-old reported to have shot herself in the right skull. Vernon Henderson, the trauma surgeon who worked on Jessica, wrote that, quote, the injury did not fit with the description, unquote. Neither of Jessica's hands had any evidence of gunpowder stippling. The wound they found on Jessica was on top of her head. The trauma surgeon said that this suggested that she would be holding the gun above her head, pointing downward. And Henderson wrote, quote, a very unusual direction in which to point the gun at oneself with the intention of committing suicide, unquote. Jessica's neurosurgeon said that it seemed like somebody shot her. Jessica also had a C-shaped bruise on the back of her head, which suggests some sort of physical injury before the shooting. It could have happened if she fell and hit the wall, but again, no blood or blood spatter on the wall or floors of the scene. Jessica's brain had been fractured, but no bullets were inside of her brain. Jessica had to be put into a medically induced coma. In the first 3 weeks Jessica was at the hospital, her husband Matthew only came to visit one time, and he had his sheriff grandfather, who had a full police uniform and his gun on him. When Jessica began to become conscious, she asked about her children first. She had absolutely no recollection of any of the events that had happened to her. When interviewed by police, she told them the last thing she remembered was being at Walmart. They asked her if Jessica ever handled Matthew's gun. Jessica's DNA had been found on the service revolver. She said, quote, no, I can't even get it out of the case, unquote. Jessica didn't even know how to unlock the safety lever in the holster. Jessica explained she would never hurt herself on purpose because of her children. She said she never had any thoughts of suicide, and the suicide text didn't sound like her writing. The GBI agents asked Jessica if she thought Matthew could be capable of shooting her, and she said, quote, honestly, I don't know. That's something you would have to figure out, unquote. Of note, Matthew said he was outside the apartment after he heard the gunshots. There are records of texts between him and his mistress at this time, many of them. And during the crime scene photos, you can see that Matthew's cell phone is near the microwave inside the home. Another huge discrepancy worth noting. When Jessica was discharged, she had headaches, ringing in her ears, and numbness on the left side of her body. By this point, Matthew and his mistress had broken up, with Calloway calling him intimidating. Matthew had a family violence protective order put onto Jessica to stay away from him and the children. Even after this order was dismissed, Matthew got full custody of Jessica's children. In September of 2016, GBI closed the case, saying that Jessica's wounds were self-inflicted, despite the fact that two-shot suicides are exceedingly rare. By December of 2016, Jessica had filed a report with the Griffin Police Department, saying that Matthew had not returned her belongings to her. Matthew had signed a sworn statement saying that he had none of Jessica's things. At this point, Matthew was seeing a woman named Shelby Willie, and they had moved in together in January of 2017. When they were moving in together, this woman, Shelby, found a gym bag of women's clothes and a retainer in it marked with Jessica's name on the case. Matthew told his girlfriend he was going to burn the bag, and the whole thing disturbed Shelby so much that she reported it to the police. Shelby was also very upset of all of Matthew's different stories about what had happened to Jessica that night. She was upset that he would laugh about it. Matthew had started his own controlling behavior with Shelby, and he began tracking her location. In May of 2017, Shelby and Matthew broke up, and by this time, Jessica was seeing her boys half the week. When Shelby left, she took the gym bag that was Jessica's and gave it to Will Sanders, a private investigator, who then gave it to police. Matthew got called into the police department for questioning about this gym bag. Here is some audio of the interrogation.
She wrote a statement saying he didn't have any of her items.
We gave everything back that we had.
Whose bag is that?
Jessica's.
And the contents in the bag?
And it's got all her stuff in it.
See, I did not have any other items of Jessica's. This is Matthew Boynton. Is that your statement?
Yes, sir.
What is that, Matthew?
That's Jessica's bag.
The bag was turned into us. We have possession of the bag that came out of your storage room. Is that true?
Yes, sir.
Do you believe that statement to be accurate and true?
Not now.
Did you believe it then?
No, sir.
But when you knew you had the bag and you didn't do anything about it, man, you put me in a situation where I don't have any other choice.
I'm clear. I'm clear. There's no excuse for it.
Matthew then took off his uniform while crying. Matthew was arrested on two felonies, filing a false statement and violating oath of office. It took a year for Matthew to even be indicted in July of 2018. And then he was cleared of both of these charges. Absolutely no charges. Jessica's grandparents tried to get Jessica's shooting case to be reopened, but no luck. Eventually, likely due to the botched investigation and the media because of it, Sheriff Beam, Matthew's grandfather, was finally voted out of office. When the new sheriff, Daryl Dix, went into his office on the first day, he found 9 industrial-sized garbage bags of shredded papers. Even the computers had been wiped clean. Jessica now lives 2 hours away from Griffin with a new man. She now has full custody of her 2 sons, after the boys expressed fear of their father, Matthew. Jessica still has migraines and no memory of the night of the shooting, but she has her sons and her dignity and her life. She is also free of an abusive man in police clothes uniform. So we can end with a few statistics, as sadly cases like this are not uncommon. A study for women in policing have said at least 40% of police officer families have experienced domestic violence in their home, compared to only 10% of families without a police officer in the house. Another study of older and more experienced officers had a rate of 24%, showing that domestic violence is 2 to 4 times more common in a home where a police officer resides. Think about how vulnerable a victim is when they are being abused. But if it is a police officer, it's even worse. The abuser owns a gun, he knows where the shelters are, and even if the victim calls to report the abuse, it is being reported to acquaintances and friends and coworkers of the offender. Usually the complaint is handled with a very informal investigation, sometimes not even a check-in on the victims. Sometimes the police officer will get counseling, but usually not. Only 19% of departments said that they would fire a cop who had two complaints of domestic abuse, which is very telling. Domestic violence complaints are not even put on the officer's performance evaluation. Many are repeat offenders. And lastly, even if an officer happened to be found guilty of domestic abuse, they usually are not fired, not demoted, and usually do not go to jail. It's so strange that you can be fired for a positive drug test, but keep your job if you physically abuse your spouse. There are many states that don't even keep track of domestic abuse within their officers. And also, we know that many, many victims will not report for obvious reasons, so you can see how prevalent of a problem this is. As always, if police officers are not held accountable, as everyone should be, nothing will change. Thank you for listening to today's case. Goodbye.
Thanks for listening to the Murderific True Crime Podcast. To support the show, join our Patreon and hear the regular podcast early and ad-free. Plus get some fun merch or buy us a coffee at buymeacoffee.com. You can find both of those links in our show notes or at murderific.com. Of course, you can rate and review Murderific on iTunes, which is free and an easy way to help others find the show. Or tell your friends, it really helps. All sources for episodes will be in the show notes. Until next time, we will be executing podcasts one crime at a time.
Craving this awful, raging, eating feeling inside. I could feel it consuming my inside, this fantastic passion. It was overwhelming me.
My name is Paige, and I'm the host of Reverie True Crime. Reverie means to daydream, but even daydreams can become nightmares. Come join me and get lost in horrific reverie about true crimes and eerie events. Reverie True Crime Podcast, available wherever you stream your favorite podcasts.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.